I don't think there's a single dairy farm in New Zealand that isn't incredibly confident right now. There's always opportunities and learnings from any situation. Definitely the biggest farming competition in New Zealand, maybe one of the bigger ones in the world.
Having that on your CV, you're going to get a job anywhere, aren't you?
Yeah, it's something they can't take away from you, I suppose, which I'm so proud of it.
This episode has been supported by TELUS Agriculture and Consumer Goods. Thousands of UK growers trust TELUS to help them connect their data and manage every part of their business with confidence. Huge thanks to them for their support of the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 341 of Meet the Farmers. I'm your host, Ben Eagle, and today we're heading to the other side of the world. We're in New Zealand, meeting self-styled Canterbury cowboy George Dodson, who in 2024 was crowned FMG Young Farmer of the Year. And if anyone doesn't know that competition, we will talk about it today, but it's very prestigious. And it's very full on, and it will give you a bit of an insight into George as well. He's also the founder of the Canterbury Young Dairy Farmers Leaders Network. And to give you an idea of his passion and drive for the dairy sector, he was already managing a farm by the age of 20. That was on a farm that he started on after high school. So today we're going to hear a little bit more about his farming journey, dairy farming in New Zealand in general. It's a good opportunity to talk about that, and also George's hopes for the future. George, welcome to Meet the Farmers. Thanks for doing this.
G'day, Ben. Great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always great to have a Kiwi on. So it's been a while since we've it's been a while since we've been out of the UK on the podcast, but it's great to be focusing on New Zealand. Just give us a little bit about an idea about where you are, first of all. Give us an idea of the landscape, the farming, where you are, and then we'll dive into your farming journey.
Yeah, so I manage a 700 cow dairy farm in Canterbury in the South Island of New Zealand. So we're down the east coast, about halfway down the South Island there. Some of the best dairy country in New Zealand, known for its sort of flatlands and irrigation. We get really nice, consistent grass growth throughout the year. However, the property I'm on is actually a rolling to steep dry land farm, so there's no irrigation on the farm I'm on. So quite unique by Canterbury standards, but maybe not too different to a lot of New Zealand, especially North Island farms. So it's a great place to be farming.
And tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into dairy farming, that sort of early part of your life.
Yeah, so I actually grew up on a dairy farm when I was a young fella down in Southland, which is down at the bottom of New Zealand. We're not very creative with our names here in New Zealand. so that's at the bottom of New Zealand. And my parents were in an equity partnership on a dairy farm there when I was a young fella. And that sort of split up when I was maybe about 11 or 12. And we moved up here to Canterbury just due to my parents' families both being up sort of in Canterbury and Marlborough ways. And I became a town kid really from 11 to about 16. And my dad bought an engineering business, and we were actually building a silo for a farmer, like a grain silo. And the farmer said to me, "Oh, do you want to come and roll some paddocks?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, can't be any worse than just building silo stuff." I wasn't really enjoying it too much. And then I became hooked, you know, and I think I always had it in my blood to be a farmer, eh? So casual work, sort of started off milking cows and rolling paddocks, and then progressed to doing all sorts of jobs on the farm, running the farm by myself on weekends through high school and that sort of thing. And I was real committed. So here in New Zealand, when we're 16, we can get our learner's license, and you can't drive a car by yourself on your learner's license, but you can drive a little moped, so like a little small motorbike with a limit of 50 cc's. And I used to drive that thing to work. It would max out about 55 kilometres an hour. I used to drive that thing from town to the dairy farm, just about probably take you half an hour on a moped. And I'd drive that in the you know, the deluge of rain or blowing winds and that sort of stuff. So I was certainly committed from a young age.
Brilliant. I love what you're saying there about actually that farmer who just gave you a chance with just even doing some rolling. I think it's such a good message to farmers out there, actually, that it just takes one chance, doesn't it, actually, to just give either someone that confidence, but also just open their eyes a bit, actually, to what the potential can be.
Oh, 100%. I think farmers sometimes are a little bit reluctant to maybe give young people a go. And obviously there's a lot of risks in farming, that sort of stuff. But I think there's a lot of variety of jobs that we can give people to do. And at the worst case, we can see if they've got a good work ethic in them and a sensible head on their shoulders to decide if we want to give them more opportunities.
So tell us about that first farming job that you got. So you left high school and I think I'm right in saying that you were supposed to be going to the States for a bit, but that all went through.
Yeah, so in New Zealand, we finish our high schooling year sort of around October or November, and I was finishing my high school year then, and I was going to just work casually on some dairy farms to save some money, and then the following June, go to Camp America and do the Camp America, working on one of the camps there. But that was 2020 when I was supposed to go to Camp America, which we all know was the COVID time, so that sort of put a hold on that one. And I was obviously just had to go look for a job. So I went and got a full-time job as a herd manager, which is sort of the step above a farm assistant, relatively similar roles anyway. You're still the junior on the farm. And, you know, sort of that kicked it into gear and took my chances from there, I suppose.
And how did that role develop?
Yeah, so I started in June 2020 as the herd manager. And then it got to about January in 2021. And the current 2IC, the second in charge on that, on that dairy farm, decided that he had had enough of milking cows, so he wanted to leave. There was an opportunity there, and the boss asked me, "Oh, you want to step into that role?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll give it a good nudge." And he was a great boss. You know, he's kind of a sink or swim boss, and he'd give you responsibilities and opportunities, and if you could handle them, you could handle them, and you'd get a lot of respect and trust from that. So, within what's that, about 7 months of full-time dairy farming, I became 2IC on a 650 cow dairy farm, and then did about a following till the following October, so October 2021, and that same boss, who was the owner operator of that farm, he had some off-farm opportunities, and he said, "Oh, do you want to manage the farm?" And I said, "Oh, to be honest, I don't think I'm ready for that. You know, I've only just turned 20 about 5 months ago. I don't know if I'm ready for it, to be fair." And he just said, "Oh, yeah, nah, all good. Yeah, I'll get another manager then." But he never actually went and got another manager. So I kind of just got chucked into it by default without too much of a choice. But it worked out pretty awesome, eh? So, yeah, managed that farm for the following, well, for the rest of the season till the end of May the following year.
Yeah, I mean, do you find that actually by throwing yourself in at the deep end, by just learning that way, is the best way for you to learn?
For me, I think so. Yeah, there's always opportunities and learnings from any situation. Obviously, you don't want to put people in situations where they can hurt themselves or others or animals, that sort of stuff. But I think he'd probably figured out by that point that he could throw me in and I'd probably swim most of the time. So he was pretty happy to have a crack at it and see what I could do. So while I wasn't that confident myself, he was pretty confident in me.
Yeah. Have you learned, and again, we'll talk about the Young Farmer of the Year competition in a bit, but have you learnt, I'm guessing you have by now, sort of what your particular strengths are on the farm, perhaps what you may delegate to others?
Yeah, I really enjoy the pasture side of things. I really enjoy feeding cows pasture. I'm not the biggest cow person. Like, I'm not a big fan of dealing with genetics or that sort of stuff. Like, my old man, he loves that sort of stuff, but I just love soils and grass and feeding animals to the best potential that I can. So that's probably my passions there.
Let's turn to, because I really want to talk about this, the Young Farmer of the Year competition. So a couple of years ago, you were given the crown for this, which is quite incredible because it is quite a contest. For anyone who doesn't know about it, just give us an insight into the competition and what's involved.
Yeah, so it's probably the biggest, was definitely the biggest farming competition in New Zealand, maybe one of the bigger ones in the world, which is pretty awesome, to be fair. I don't think there's many things like it around the world. So what happens is you start at a district level for this competition. Now in your district, there's maybe about 30 competitors. And then through this district competition, that 30 is weaned down to 8. And then you compete, these 8 people compete at the regionals. The winner of that 8 from the regionals will represent their region. So in New Zealand, there's 7 young farmers regions. And if you represent your region, you go to the grand final. And then if you can win the grand final against these other 6 competitors, then you'll be crowned the Young Farmer of the Year. As to what we do in the Young Farmer of the Year competition, so I'll probably just rattle off a few things that we did in the grand final, because that's the big stage that everyone likes to see. So we had business projects to do. We had a big 3-hour exam that was, there was all kinds of things. There was accounting, there was soil sciences,
blimey,
all this sort of stuff. We did some HR modules, I suppose. You were given a scenario with some actors and that sort of thing, and you had to work out some HR stuff. We had to do a speech in front of about 300 people. We had the big evening buzzer quiz, which is the main event and sort of the evening show that people see. And then there's the big practical day as well. So on practical day, you have a couple of head-to-heads, which we call the agri sports. So that's usually in an arena style where the crowd watches you and you're all doing the same thing and you're all competing against each other in that race. So we did a bit of butchery there. And then in the second one, there was like taking loaders on and off tractors, priming pumps, assembling calf feeders. Ooh, there were some other things in there that I couldn't even remember, to be fair. I was going that flat out. There was filleting a fish, things like that. And then we also have the farmlets, so that's all your standard fencing, doing stock water, building, and then we also had the we had like stock sales and stuff. So you had to go and create. There was a scenario created. You had to go and buy these stock, and there was a live auction and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, pretty intense.
Yeah, that is super full on. I mean, and I'm guessing. I mean, you must have. You must have grown a lot through that as well. I mean, how much did you know what was coming, and how sort of daunted were you, and how much did you just throw yourself into it?
You do a fair bit of research. I mean, my first thing when I won the regional was to go and talk to previous winners of the grand final, so I knew what was coming at me. I knew it was going to be pretty daunting because it's a lot of work. And I think I had about 5 months between 4 or 5 months between winning the regional and actually competing at the grand final. And essentially, with all those different things, you're teaching yourself the most practical degree that you could get just about within 4 months. So it's basically like having a second full-time job if you're going real hard at it. Like I spent every spare minute, every evening, every weekend, you know, studying or preparing or training.
Yeah, it's what I was thinking. It sounds like doing more than is involved in a degree, just in a really short amount of time.
Yeah, there's some people actually that have the opportunities will take their full-time job off for those few months. Like I know a few previous champions who have taken 4 or 5 months off work so they could do it full-time to try and win the competition, which is, it's pretty intense.
Amazing. Well, congrats again. And I'm guessing that's a bit of an accolade for life as well, isn't it? It's sort of, I mean, having that on your CV, you're going to get a job anywhere, aren't you?
Yeah, it's something they can't take away from you, I suppose, which, you know, I'm so proud of it. I was, you know, saying to my parents probably a month or so before, I was like, oh, surely, Dad, you'll come have a few beers with us if I get in the top 3, because I was certainly expecting, you know, no better than that, to be fair. And my dad had been at a grand final before and he'd placed 6th, so I said, you know what, my goal's just going to be, as long as I don't come last and I place higher than Dad did when he was there, I'll be bloody stoked with it. And to come away with that first place. And I managed to chase the guy down in front of me in the buzzer quiz, which is the one that's in front of sort of 800 people at the evening show where the awards are given out, which was, it was a pretty insane moment, really.
I want to ask you actually about like accessibility into the industry generally, and sort of how you think ag ranks as a good career to get into in New Zealand. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think it's exceptional, to be fair. Like I might be biased, but I think it's exceptional, to be fair, especially dairy farming. You know, we're very fortunate here in New Zealand compared to any other country in the world that is dairy farming, that we have such a great progression ladder, and under that Fonterra blanket, you know, everyone works together as one. So we're a unified industry. No single farmer's competing against their neighbour or competing against the next region up the road. So everyone collaborates and works together to try and push in the same direction, I suppose. I couldn't talk too much about other parts of agriculture like cropping or sheep and beef, and those guys, like any industry, have their struggles with profitability a lot of the time, with no subsidies for farming here in New Zealand. So I think it's just great to be outdoors and get amongst it and do something practical with hands on. I spent today at a desk in a classroom, which was, you know, learning some great things, but I very much struggle to sit down all day.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely strikes me whenever I speak to anyone involved in New Zealand ag, there is this real positivity about the industry and where you're going. Almost no matter what the markets are doing, there's still this real sort of focus on the long term.
Yeah, well, I think we're very, environmentally friendly and efficient farmers. We obviously have the benefit of our climate, which allows us to grow grass for most of the year compared to pretty much any other country in the world. There's very few countries with a similar climate to us. So that gives us the benefit of being able to produce really cheap milk or protein, depending on what you're farming. So it's, we don't rely on the cost as much and we have no subsidies here. So we've learned to farm certainly within our means over time.
That's certainly something that UK farmers are adjusting to, let's say that at the moment, being in the very early days. Tell me about the Canterbury Young Dairy Farmers Leaders Network. What is this and why did you start it?
Yeah, I spent a year managing a farm down in Southland a few years back, and when I came back to Canterbury, I felt there was actually a bit of a gap for, in discussion groups and that sort of things, which we have quite commonly here in New Zealand. They're quite often targeted like your farm owners and share milkers, people with their own business. And I felt there was a gap for people who are, I suppose, farm managers, maybe contract milkers or 2ICs who are sort of in the middle point of that progression pathway where they'd done their first few years as a farm assistant or whatever. They had a really good base of knowledge and they were trying to, you know, there's always that gap between your intense growth period when you start out and then you sort of not quite plateau, but you have to manage for a few years to try and save some money so you can go and start your own business, whether that be share milking or contract milking. So in that gap, there was no real, I suppose, support or growth network for people. Especially those farm managers. So I wanted to provide a network, I suppose, those people could grow their knowledge with expert information that we could, you know, as individuals, we couldn't probably get those people in the same room with us. But as a collective group, we could bring in, you know, certainly some outstanding people that could teach us some pretty cool things. And also just to network, you know, in terms of finding opportunities for people and potential business partnerships going forward.
You mentioned share milking and contract milking there. How easy is it to find opportunities like that?
Contract milking is becoming more and more common here in New Zealand. So as a contract milker, you'll pay the wages of your staff, you'll hire the staff, you'll provide like the motorbikes and that sort of stuff, as well as paying for your cowshed expenses. And that's becoming quite common, and the farm owner will give you a fixed amount per milk solid that you produce for that. Becoming very common as our sort of the owners age out a bit and they don't want to be managing the staff or have the liability for that and don't want to be running the day-to-day. So that's getting outsourced to contract milkers quite a bit. Share milking is, you know, 50-50 share milking was the traditional path to buying a farm in New Zealand. It allowed you to grow your equity really quickly. You'd own the cows, pay the staff, run all the bills and stuff. The farm owner would own the land and you'd both split the milk check, usually in half as a 50-50 share milker. And it's becoming certainly less prominent these days. So I think contract milking is a great way for people to grow. And it's probably not becoming easier to get, but there's probably more opportunities around. And share milking is probably going the opposite way a little bit. So there is perhaps a widening gap there.
Let's dive a little bit more into New Zealand dairy itself. I mean, for listeners overseas, perhaps here in the UK or elsewhere, listeners elsewhere in the world, how would you describe a sort of standard New Zealand dairying system?
Yeah, so New Zealand is very much pasture-based farming. We have a very temperate climate here with the small island. You know, we get very mostly consistent rainfall depending on what part of the country you're in, and a nice climate that allows us to grow grass pretty much for the entire year. And the cows, that means the cows can also be outside for the entire year as well. We use a bit of winter cropping in the South Island to manage cows through the winter. And in the North Island, they tend to grow so much grass that they'll just winter their cows on grass on the dairy platform. We have a sort of system ranking, I guess almost a matrix really, that defines if your farms are system 1 to 5. Now, basically what that means is number one is you're just grass, you don't buy in any supplementary feed, and you'll winter all your cows and raise all your own young stock on your dairy farm. And system 5 is you're bringing in, I can't remember what the exact numbers in, but that's basically you're bringing in quite a bit of supplementary feed per cow, and you'll be grazing your cows off farm and that sort of stuff. So a lot of, especially cannery farms, probably fit in that system 3 to 4 range. So they might be importing probably, you know, maybe averaging 700 kilos of supplement to 900 kilos of supplement per cow over a year. And that's not including them wintering their cows off farm for about 2 months of the year as well. So, you know, a lot of their feed is coming from outside sources, but still majority grass-based.
And, I mean, from an outside perspective, we hear quite a bit in terms of, on the news, in terms of environmental regulation. How's that impacting you as farmers on the ground?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there always has to be, I suppose, a carrot and a stick when trying to change things. And the stick is obviously the regulations at the end of it. Now, a lot of farmers here are trying to be more profitable, and you know, with things like nitrogen fertilizer, putting on more and more does not necessarily mean that you're going to grow more and more grass at a profitable expenditure. So there's things like a N190 cap here that we have that allows us to only apply 190 units of N per hectare per year. So that sort of thing is definitely maybe slowed grass growth a touch in a lot of regions that would have applied more than that previously. But what it's done is actually sharpened up the efficiency on farm, and we're not basically throwing on nitrogen that's probably just going to be leached away or go into things like waterways now. There's also a fair bit of native plantings going in and ditches and drains and that sort of stuff, which is certainly just livening the place up a bit, really, and it's looking fantastic for the future. There's not, you know, we have consents for effluent and that sort of stuff, which would be standard in any dairying place, I suppose, in the world. So yeah, just trying to manage those things. And at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff is that heavily scrutinized that it will often just make us more efficient farmers if it gets to that level where it becomes regulation.
And then on, again, mentioning profitability there, export, I mean, Fonterra themselves are very outward looking. We look at, yeah, certainly, yeah, there are markets closer to you, but also further away as well. As farmers, how do you sort of feel? I mean, obviously you've been subsidy free for decades now, but I mean, how exposed do you feel to global markets? Do you feel as farmers that you're very much just getting on with the job, or do you feel that sort of that squeeze of global markets?
Yeah, look, we always feel, I think any farmer feels the squeeze, you know, as price takers, as any farmer is, really. We kind of just take what the market gives us. Here in New Zealand, we're very focused on a low cost system. So it's about, you know, putting in a minimal amount. We don't spend heaps on infrastructure like big feed pads or barns, or not many farmers do anyway. We don't have to house our cows inside or anything like that. We don't have to cut and carry much feed apart from the bit of supplement that we do bring in. So it certainly keeps our costs down. And a lot of New Zealand farmers just focus on keeping those costs low, knowing that if that milk price comes down, we can weather that storm. It's certainly challenging, probably the last, well, maybe not the last couple of years, because we've had fantastic milk prices the last few years in New Zealand. But, you know, you go back to times like, I think it was 2014, 2015, we had a milk price under $4 a milk solid then, which, you know, when you look at it now, it's over $10. That certainly puts the squeeze on people, and inflation has been pretty rampant in the last 5-6 years since COVID. So, I mean, if we got a $4 milk price again, that would be horrendous. But with the levels of inflation, I don't think we would. Well, I hope we wouldn't see that levels again. But we just focus inwardly, right? We try and make not as much milk as as possible, but we try and make a good amount of milk at the cheapest cost possible. And some of the best farmers I work for, they actually have this saying. They say, "Production is sanity, profit." Production is vanity, profit is sanity.
Yeah,
just focus on low cost, keep the profit margins, and if the milk price goes down, we weather the storm. If it goes up, we take the profits.
Yeah, that could well be the episode title for this episode, actually. In terms of looking ahead to the future, we'll talk about your sort of journey in a bit, but where do you see sort of New Zealand dairy heading in the next sort of 5 years or so? Are you confident for the future? Are you confident that you're in the right industry?
I don't think there's a single dairy farmer in New Zealand that isn't incredibly confident right now. Yeah, I think the introduction of technology is going to improve things massively. Like, we will just continue to dial down on our low-cost systems and just try and grow more grass, harvest more grass and make more milk and try and keep it as low-cost as possible. And the technology is going to, allow us to improve the efficiency of everything that we put into the system, I think, really. To give you an idea of the confidence that people have in dairy farming, here in Canterbury, I hear there's been consents put in for an additional 60 dairy farms in the Canterbury region, which, wow, when the average size of those conversions would be over 1,000 cows, you're talking in the Canterbury region, the potential to increase between 60 to maybe even up to 90,000 dairy cows in the next few years. And this is, wow, this is, a lot of these are cropping farmers that have struggled for years with profitability, so they're willing to invest up front and build milking sheds and refence their farms and all that sort of stuff, and willing to dive headfirst into dairy farming.
There'll be lots of dairy farmers here in the UK and across Europe, I'm sure, who've pricked their ears up at that. Meet the Farmers is all about the people behind our food and the reality of what it takes to keep a farm running for generations. Farming is hard enough without juggling multiple systems, spreadsheets and paperwork. That's where TELUS Agriculture and Consumer Goods comes in. They bring everything together, crop management, farm accounting, payroll and IT, into one joined up setup built specifically for UK farms. That means clearer visibility across your farm, records that stay audit ready, and more time in the field so you can focus on what really matters. Backed by decades of UK expertise and a local team that understands the realities of modern farming and the pressures you face. Get the full story on their Smarter Farm Solutions at telus.com/farmsmarter. Let's talk a little bit about your future as well. Where do you see your career going? Where would you like your career to go?
And that's an interesting question, to be fair. It seems to change fairly regularly. the ultimate goal is to buy, a decent whack of land with my family. And I suppose the goal for me has always stayed the same, but the route to get there, it can change fairly regularly depending on what's going on. The farm I'm on has been sold that I'm managing at the moment. So me and my partner are moving on from here at the end of the month. And we'll be going to the family farm, which was purchased, which is about 30 minutes down the road, purchased at the start of this current season we're in, so August last year. And my dad's been running that. So myself and my parents, we own the 50-50 share milking business on there. So half and half each, really. And I'm going down to help my dad out for calving, basically, in winter. We're building a new cow shed on there this coming season, so we can do a fair bit of that work ourselves. And then over mating time, I'm going to be doing an AI course. I don't know what you guys call it there, but artificially mating cows, basically.
Yeah.
And then, who knows, after Christmas, New Year's, maybe a bit of travel in the books. I don't think the farm would need myself and my dad to run it for the whole season. I don't know if there'd be enough work on there, to be fair. But longer term, we'd love to continue to grow that business and work together in that business. It's always been my dream to work with my dad. We get along, very well, and we both have different interests that complement each other very well within the business. As I said, he's a cow man. He loves cows and genetics and all that sort of stuff, whereas I'm a bit more of a pasture man and soils and, out in the paddock sort of thing. So I think we complement each other very well. Look forward to working together. We'd love to just keep growing that business. We're actually expanded from 280 cows this season to 400 for the upcoming season, and we're hoping for the season after we'll be able to lease a bit more land from the neighbour potentially and grow to 600 cows, which would definitely give us enough room to keep both of us in the business.
And like you say, I mean, it sounds like that's a great combination between your dad's sort of skill sets and what he likes doing and yours as well. Should work really well together.
Yeah, well, the other thing of having two, essentially manager caliber people there is we both have different things off farm. So he's still got his engineering business, which does take up a bit of his time. And I have the social media stuff, which I'm hoping to continue and grow in that. So if we're working together, then it's the opportunity that one of us can always be off farm at a time, basically, unless we're very hectic. So, it gives both of us the opportunity to step into those other things outside the farm gate.
Fantastic. And I think it's another thing that farmers, depending on your situation, it's sometimes not that easy, is it? But actually, if you design your system so you can do that, then brilliant. You mentioned travel a bit. Where's on your bucket list?
Well, me and my partner, we went to the States last year, which was outstanding, and we just love being in the southern states of America.
You finally got there.
Yeah. Well, we went last year. We were supposed to come to the UK actually in April. Just last month.
And I thought you were.
Yeah. We were supposed to fly through Qatar, so you can imagine how that went.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
so that may be, maybe on the list as well. But, just depending on where we're at, might be keen to just get out and see the world a bit more while we have an opportunity.
What message or advice would you give to a young person, either in New Zealand or somewhere else in the world, who's thinking about maybe getting into a dairy farming career?
I think you've got to be prepared to get pretty dirty, get your hands stuck in. Get your hands in, don't get stuck into whatever you're doing. It's not necessarily going to be the most glamorous job in the world, but I'll tell you what, if you've got passion for it, it'll pay for itself in leaps and bounds. Especially in New Zealand, great opportunities to progress and own your own business and grow a fair bit of wealth for yourself. I just love farming and being outdoors, and I know a lot of people get sick of being in the concrete jungle, so it's a great opportunity to get out there and into some rural communities that usually have great people in them that want to help each other out and support each other all the time. So I think it's a great lifestyle.
I think that's a great ad for the industry. If you had to sum up dairy farming in New Zealand in a sentence, what would you say?
Efficient, low-cost, pasture-based systems.
Brilliant, nicely done. And I'm just going to ask you the final two questions they ask everyone who comes on the show. The first is, if you had a message to the public, any message, what would it be?
Yeah, I try to share the message on my social media a lot. I think in every country with farming, you struggle with a divide between farmers and people that live in town, sometimes call them townies. And they don't have an understanding of what we do and that we actually care about our environment and our land and our animals sometimes. I think it's a bit of a misconception from them. And I can't blame them for that. A lot of the stuff in media is portrayed negatively towards farmers and they've never seen any different. So, I think it's just, look at your local farmers and get out there and actually see and learn what's going on to grow your food, I suppose, because often there's a family behind it that's putting a whole lot of blood, sweat and tears into creating that food and they're just proud of what they do. So I think you just, look at that and, maybe understand the story of how your food's made a bit more.
And finally, a message to your fellow farmers at the moment.
Oh, probably depends what country they're in, to be fair. I mean, if you're in an industry, that's doing well, I'd say, take the win that you have at the moment, make sure you reinvest the profits wisely and pay down some debt if you can and just reduce that risk to external forces. If you're an industry that's not doing too well, I just say, keep your costs down, keep your chin up, keep looking forward and keep trying to progress your business and, the good times will come eventually. It's a farming cyclical. When prices go up, prices go down again. Likewise, when prices go down, they always come back up again. So the opportunity will come your way once again.
I think that's a great way to think, and I think it's a great way to finish the episode. George, thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it's been such a privilege actually to hear your story. Certainly based on how you started your career, and I'm sure you've got a really bright future ahead. I hope everything goes well for working with your dad. I'm sure it will, by the sounds of it. Lots of exciting things happening there, and it's just best of luck for everything.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
Well, we will leave it there for today's episode. A massive thank you to my guest, George Dodson, for coming on the show. Thank you also for listening wherever you are. If you don't already subscribe to the show and you enjoyed this episode, please hit that subscribe button, whether you are watching or listening. I hope you can join me next time. But for now, I'm Ben Eagle. This has been Meet the Farmers. And thank you very much for listening.